Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Fonterra Q1 Business Update conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. I'll now hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Miles Hurrell, CEO. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here this morning. I'm joined by Mark Rivers, our CFO, and Simon Till, Director of Capital Markets. Of course, this morning we released to the markets our media release and slide presentation, and I intend to take you through a few of the slides this morning before we open up for Q&A. If you do have the slide pack in front of you now, I'll start taking that. The first summary slide shows that relative to the prior year, we've made a strong start to the 2020 financial year. A normalized EBIT of 171 million is up some 145 on the prior year. This came from an improvement in both ingredients and consumer food service earnings, up 32 million and 56 million respectively. A reported EBIT of 259 million is up 233. The difference between normalized and reported were some positive one-offs, which include a 64 million dollar gain on sale from the sale of Foodspring, which we announced back in June this year, and 22 million dollars from the mark-to-market revaluation of our BMH shares. Of course, we made a change in our accounting approach to BMH at the end of the financial year. And so over the first quarter, the share price has increased from 5.54 renminbi to 6.08. Notwithstanding, that's come back of late, but in the quarter, 22 million dollars from the mark-to-market revaluation. Pleased to see the team's continuing focus on financial discipline, with operating expenditure reducing 104 million to 552 million for the quarter, and we're managing our capital expenditure carefully and remain on target for 500 million for the year, which is again some 100 million below our full year for last year. Our free cash flow has also improved by a further 595 million from the year prior, driven primarily due to the improved earnings, which I've covered, favourable working capital movements, the lower capital expenditure run rate, and of course the proceeds from the Foodspring sale. Today we also announced the forecast farm gate milk price increase to a midpoint of 7.30, and have narrowed the range also to 7 to 7.60, which is up from 6.55 per kilogram of milk solids. Should be noted, of course, the higher milk price does start to put pressure on the input costs across the business, but we are comfortable with maintaining our earnings guidance for the year despite that increase. When we announced our strategy in September, we said there are three things that will be important to us moving forward and announcing a triple bottom line reporting approach through a healthy business by delivering sustainable results, a healthy people by caring for our people and making positive impact on society, and a healthy environment, working together to achieve a healthy environment for our farming and societies. And I am pleased with the progress that we're making across all of those areas, and I'll touch on them now. If we do look at the next slide, and as I've summarised, we've had a positive start in what we're seeing as a year of transition for the co-op. I've covered the headline figures except for revenue, which is up 446 million to 4.3 billion, again on the back of increased pricing in market. If you look at the business platforms along the bottom of the slide, ingredients gross margin up 55 million to 328 million, driven primarily by New Zealand ingredients up 39 due to increased sales volumes, but also progress out of Prolosur, which is our ingredients business in Chile, and Australian ingredients, where growth margins have increased 9 and 8 million respectively due to increased product mix and pricing. Ingredients EBIT is up 32 million on the back of improved performance out of Australia and Chile, and at the same time keeping our costs under control. Consumer and food service gross margin has increased 16 million to 406 million. Due to the strong performance of food service, but partially offset by lower gross margins in consumer in some markets. Food service gross margin is up 36 million to 115 million, and its gross increase from 15.4 to 18.7, which is very pleasing. Some strong demand signals out of China and the Philippines and the bakery channels has helped that. In addition, improved pricing in Indonesia, as well as a focus on high margin products, is supporting that. Food service margin is up $35 million to $59 million due to improved sales volumes and higher gross margin products. Consumer gross margins declined $19 million to $291 million, partly due to the removal of Tip Top versus this time last year, following its divestment, but at the same time, some ongoing disruption in Hong Kong that we are monitoring closely. However, consumer EBIT is up $22 million to $59 million due to reduced operating expenses that we continue to have across the business. Overall, consumer and food service EBIT in totality increased $56 million to $118 million. China Farms, on an end-to-end earning basis, improved from a $23 million loss this time last year to $6 million loss. Pleasing to note, our Fonterra-owned farms EBIT is up $19 million from a loss of $15 million last year to slightly above break-even, but offset a little bit by our joint venture farms, which their losses have come through to $8 million this year as we still see the second farm ramping up to full productivity. Regarding healthy people, on the following slide, our early priority for the year has been to reorganise our business to deliver the best value-focused strategy. Good progress has been made, and we are now set up to take a more customer-centric approach to our business, which helps our in-markets teams drive demand for our milk and maximise value. Like any restructure, however, making changes has been tough on our people, and it was never going to be easy, especially in a period of uncertainty and having to lose some great people from the co-op. And I want to acknowledge those people, those employees, for their patience and understanding through that time. The focus from here is to continue to build that culture that can consistently deliver results, and one that both our employees and our farmers are happy to work with. If I look at the next slide, from a healthy environment perspective, during the first quarter, we met a number of important milestones towards our transition to a more sustainable way of operating. The most significant announcement, alongside other members of the primary sector, was to work with government to plan to support farmers to make the necessary changes to help meet New Zealand's international climate change obligations, while at the same time maintaining on-farm profitability. Last week, we released our third sustainability report detailing our environmental, social and economic performance, and they can, of course, be found on our website. Now, finally, the outlook for 2020 slide, and I mentioned earlier that while we've maintained our guidance of 15 to 25 cents per share, there are, of course, some challenges we need to watch for. As we look out to the financial performance, the biggest pressure will, of course, be on that rising milk price. As we mentioned, the farmgate milk price has increased to 7.30 midpoint and narrowing the range to 7 to 7.60. But at the same time, some difficult trading conditions in some markets. I referred to Hong Kong, but we've also seen the civil unrest in Chile playing out, and we've watched that closely. But stronger forecast performance in our food service business has offset some of that unrest somewhat. That's it from me. I'll now hand across for any questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request at any time, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Arie Dekker from Jarden. Please go ahead.
Oh, morning, Miles. Yeah, first question, I guess, just on resumption of dividends, I guess with reference to where sort of you see debt sitting at the moment and performance, do you see yourself being on track to resume dividends at the interim result? And I guess just on that as well, or are asset sales still required to kind of get back to that position and that timing?
Yeah, so you know, nothing's changed from our year-end position on that. That we do need to work on our debt position. That does require us to move on a couple of asset sales that we have announced. But as we are tracking through first quarter, our underlying business performance gives us confidence to take a discussion to the board at that appropriate time.
Great. Well, that's positive. And then just with reference to the processes you have underway, could you give an update on both Brazil and you know the exit there, but also you know in terms of the strategic review of China Farms, just an update on sort of where you're at in those processes. You know, any visibility on timing? That would be great.
Yeah, I'll give a start and maybe Mark can talk a bit more detail. Of course, we are into some confidential conversations now that we can't go too far other than to say we're expecting some offers on the table after the new year out of Brazil and working very closely with Nestle and trying to progress that quickly. And similarly, some due diligence discussions are underway with interested parties on the China farms. But maybe Mark, if there's anything further.
Yeah, no, the Brazil discussions are going well. It's important that it's a joint process with the JV partner Nestle. Fair amount of interest in it, and we'll just run the, you know, as it needs to be run to get to a good conclusion. But we're expecting in the early part of the year to hit some milestones there. The idea is really to conclude things within the financial year. Ideally, if it takes a little bit longer than that, then so be it. But that's the intent. And on the farms, you know, the process is probably a range of options really on the farms. And we're talking to you know, again, a range of potential partners in that. So it's not as far along as the Brazil discussions.
Okay, thanks. Just on CapEx, you know, obviously, I think some positive statements there around being on track with your much smaller CapEx envelope. I mean, as you go through and you're actually sort of working within this reduced envelope and things are coming through in that, are you seeing opportunities for that to come down further as you sort of assess it in the new framework, or alternatively, you know, does it look too tight?
So the $500 million that we've announced, you know, the rate of depreciation for our current asset base sort of puts us around that $400 million. So that still allows for growth opportunities where appropriate. So we're feeling very comfortable around the level at the moment. If I look at that cash flow, positive cash flow position versus last year, there was very little carryover capex, if that makes sense. That you know, we finished the year at $600 million last financial year, but very few projects were actually in flight, which is why the capex is off to a slow start, if you can say that, from a spend perspective. But of course, a lot of that ramps up as the year progresses. So I'm around that 500. As I say, given the rate of depreciation, sort of the circa 400.
Sure. And last question, just on Chile, you know, obviously a few issues there last year. You're pretty comfortable that was a bit of an aberration and it could kind of get back to where it was in FY20. I mean, it did improve in the first quarter, but you're kind of calling it out just, you know, as still a little bit of risk there. Can you just sort of talk about what's happening in Chile and you know, a little bit more colour on, you know, what your concerns are through the balance of this year, what might hold up a return to the more historical levels of profitability?
Yeah, so the issues that we faced last year, which we explained in a bit of detail, sort of the social media attack earlier in the year, last financial year, which had the impact. So, you know, I'd like to think we're through that, and we did have a good start. Quarter four was in pretty good shape actually for Chile, and quarter one actually got off to an okay start. But of course, now we've got this different issues with the civil unrest. And while that hasn't played out, you know, financially, we're not really seeing that play out at the moment. We're watching carefully. If you look at, you know, some of the attacks on retail outlets and supermarkets and those sort of things, and buying behaviours, we're starting to see change with people sort of, you know, trading down and you know, so we just need to see that play out a little bit further. So we are calling that out. It's something we're watching very, very closely.
Thank you.
Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question today, please press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of Marcus Curley from UBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just a few from me. Miles, I just wondered if you could give us a little bit of background in terms of how you think about the second half of the year or the second quarter and second half. I suppose with a big increase in profitability in the first quarter, and I suppose unchanged guidance, which in the midpoint would suggest broadly flat profitability, it sort of implies, the business profitability comes under a bit of pressure in the second half, and if so, could you just provide a bit of colour in terms of, what divisions are likely to see the greatest level of profit pressure?
It's a good question. Well, I'm really pleased with the start from the business, and I'm hoping that the market and certainly our farmers and unit holders are seeing the start. But when you start to get into above $7 and sort of milk price, and that starts to impact your COGS line, it becomes a question of how fast and far you can push those increases into the consumer and food service markets. And so, it's early days. This gives us an opportunity to challenge those boundaries in the markets, and monitor accordingly whether it starts to burn off demand or not. So that's why we watch that closely. So we are assuming there will be some erosion of margin compared to where we've been from quarter one. So we don't extrapolate that out and see us ahead of our guidance. But we just need to watch that. And at the same time, that's from a New Zealand perspective. And at the same time, you get a couple of clouds on the horizon and an important market like Chile to us. We need to work well, which again plays into our approach around keeping the guidance the same.
Okay. And then just in the first quarter, just drilling down in terms of New Zealand ingredients performance, margins there broadly flat, gross margins. But by the look of things, there was a better stream return in the first quarter, if my numbers are right. So I suppose does that mean you've seen some pressure on price premiums, or maybe can you explain the dynamics in that first quarter in the New Zealand ingredients business?
Hey Marcus, it's Mark. So on stream returns, we started out the year okay on stream returns. We've started to see some of that ease off towards the end of the quarter, and we expect that to pick back up towards the end of the year. But that's certainly where this margin pressure will show up. Will be in pressurizing stream returns. So it depends on the component performance, right? The other thing to just bear in mind when you're comparing year on year goji gross margins from this year to last year is DFE being of course absent now, right? With the sale of DFE, so that gross margins and EBIT would be missing from this year's goji performance.
Okay, I suppose. When I look at the pricing that's been published this morning on non-reference products, I was sort of surprised with only 5% growth year on year in non-reference prices in a New Zealand dollar sense. I suppose in US dollar sense that would suggest pretty flat year on year non-reference prices, and I can't find a non-reference commodity that's not up significantly year on year. So I suppose that non-reference price point in the first quarter is a little confusing for me.
Well, so I think in the components, of course, if you look around, so cheese is I don't think we'd see the same sort of price pressures there, where just the competitive landscape is you're going up against European cheese producers and the like, so that's We're not seeing the same dynamics there compared to whole milk powder, especially skim milk powder in particular. Butter, of course, has stayed relatively flat, which is, of course, some good news for the food service business, which is very dependent on that. But the biggest dynamics are whole milk powder, skim milk powder, but cheese, we've not seen the same. So that would be the, probably the biggest component of the non-RCP.
Yeah, well, I could be wrong here, but I think cheese prices are up about 10% year on year in the first quarter versus last year, based off GDT. Anyway, I can take it offline. And then finally, I just wondered if you can provide a bit of perspective in terms of what you're thinking about in terms of volume growth for the year in food service and consumer. Obviously, the first quarter, in food service, you had the benefit of the normalization in the inventory in China. So just in terms of how you're seeing the underlying volume trends, in those two components would be useful.
Yeah, I think we'll see. I would expect food service volume to continue to do well this year. As you say, there's a bit of a normalization happening maybe at the moment, but that's the butter stocks in China have worked its way out, so we're back to more normal trading conditions. But the underlying growth of the market is definitely showing through. We've expanded into more cities, as we saw in some of the commentary in mainland China, which is very positive. And we're also working hard outside of China, so in Southeast Asia as well in food service. So I expect those volumes to continue. On the consumer side, of course, you'll want to just factor in. Tip Top is out of the results, and we don't have Venezuela in the operations anymore either. So that might show up in some of the volumes. And on top of that, this is where we're focusing on our portfolio. We're prioritizing where the most valuable products are, so that volume to value switch will show up, I think, on the consumer side.
Yeah, and probably just worth expanding on that a little bit, because while we do see the continuation of volume growth around food service, again, when you get to these price points, the question is, at what point do you see demand start to come off, and so the you start making some trade-off decisions around volume versus value, and clearly value needs to be the key driver here, without losing our positions, of course. But making those calls that are going to drive value for our business is going to be paramount.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder: if you wish to ask a question today, please press *1. Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I would like to hand the conference back to today's presenters. Please continue.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your attendance. Of course, Simon and his team are available for any further detailed questions. But again, thank you for your attendance, and I look forward to seeing you shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.